for this second talk of this retreat. Usually at this stage, still encourage people to take it easy, to allow their body and their mind to acclimatize, to the what's happening here in this retreat. Still keep it very, very loose, and not to try too hard, because a lot of the time, all it means is that one needs to give the mind time, to give it the opportunity of time to be able to start getting peaceful. Some of you may already be seeing some results, and sometimes those results are just appreciated just when you get up and you go out for a walk in the garden, or you start having your breakfast, and you find yourself less concerned with the world, less troubled. You find the mind is beginning to slow down, is beginning to become peaceful as everything starts to slow. One of my favourite similes is that walking up the hill to my monastery in Serpentine, 2 kilometres up that hill, and so often you've gone up that hill in a car. When you walk up that hill, it's completely different. When you stop, it's different again. The slower you go, the more you see. Your senses have got time when you go slow to appreciate what's going on. As you slow down in this retreat, it's as if your senses of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch become more enhanced. They got the time to appreciate the beauty of the garden outside. They got the opportunity to appreciate the beautiful taste of the fruit. You've got the time to appreciate the beautiful softness of your mattress and pillow in the morning. It's one of the reasons why it's hard to get up. But it doesn't matter at this particular stage, because after a while, energy will start to come and you want to get up, because you also appreciate the beauty of practicing deeper and deeper states of meditation. The talk on the second day, I usually talk about the hindrances, the problems, the difficulties to meditation. And one of the first difficulties I like to point out is impatience. As we hear all these inspiring things, and it's important I do talk about what happens in meditation to inspire you, to give some sort of motivation. The problem with motivation, it often gets entangled with impatience. That we want it now. We want to get there now. And that's one of the biggest problems with our meditation. What impatience is, it's a lack of real understanding of what's going on. It's like a simile I gave in retreats some time ago of a lady who wants to get the dishes done. They look at all the dishes, the dirty dishes in the sink, and they think, oh, when are my dishes going to be done? Oh, when are my dishes going to get done? Oh, I want my dishes to get done. And of course, that lady never gets the dishes done when you start thinking like that. The second lady thinks, oh, I've got all these dishes in my sink. What is the cause for getting those dishes done? And they realise the cause for getting the dishes done is washing them. And so they take their attention away from impatience and wanting the goal just to appear like that. And they look at the cause. What causes dishes to be done, to be clean? And then they put their effort into the causes. Then, after a very short while, those dishes a sparkling, clean, radiant, so beautiful to behold. In the same way that some meditators come on this retreat and think, oh, when am I going to get jhana? When am I going to get jhana? When am I going to get jhana? You never get jhana that way. But if you think, what are the causes for jhana? Then it is letting go. You're patient. You make sure that these hindrances I'm going to talk about aren't really there. And when you put your attention on the causes rather than the results, then you start to work. And in no time at all, just like your dishes were sparkling, clean and radiant, lovely to behold, now you find your mind is sparkling, radiant, beautiful, lovely and clean, wonderful to behold. As you get nimittas and get close to jhanas, or even in jhanas. So this is the trick with impatience. Impatience is spending too much time looking at the goal. and not enough time recognizing the causes and working for those causes. And you have to know what those causes are. I've given those details to you. It's letting go. Understand that, first of all, so there's no what we might call misunderstandings, no delusion about what you're supposed to be doing. I will actually go off on the tangent away from the hindrances by talking about that third noble truth I mentioned last night. The third noble truth in Buddhism is all about letting go. And letting go is the cause of nirvana. And the meditation which you're going to be getting now is getting closer and closer to nirvana. In fact, the joy, which is the main aspect of the first jhana, the happiness, the bliss, the Buddha calls Sambodhisukha, enlightenment joy. That's what he called it, because it's that close. As you go into deeper and deeper meditations, the more peaceful, the more still, the more happy you feel, the closer you are to nirvana. This is where you're going, in that direction. But when the Buddha said letting go is a way to achieve nirvana, the Buddha actually talked about four ways of letting go. They're all complementary, all overlapping. And I'm going to maybe start with those, first of all, in this talk. The four ways of letting go. And the first way of letting go is called liberality. Giving. Generosity. Now what that really means, for those of you who have, you know, been generous by giving dana to the monks, giving donations to the monasteries or donations to charities, you should know that real generosity is where you expect nothing back in return. You don't give expecting your name to be put on the building which you donated, because that's just a business deal. Real giving is, you know, if it's putting some money in the donation box and not even writing your name on it, so no one knows where it came from. You're not expecting anything back whatsoever at all. That's real giving. What that means in the sense of meditation is you give this hour to the meditation without expecting anything back at all. You give 9 days to the meditation retreat, not expecting or anticipating anything. You're giving, not expecting to get something back. Ajahn Charles used to say, we meditate to let go, not to get things. Sure, actually we do achieve jhanas, but if you want to get those jhanas, it is putting all your attention on the goal and not on the causes. The causes of getting jhana is not wanting jhana. It's giving up, just doing this meditation for the sake of doing the meditation, not to get anything back. Now that's especially important when you start looking at things like the present moment awareness and silence. If you put your attention in the present moment, trying to get something back from it, then you'll always be disappointed and you won't be able to stay in the present moment. Still be too much wanting. I'll stay in the present moment as long as my pain goes, my gut ache goes, my headache goes, as long as I'm peaceful, as long as I can see my past lives, I'll do that. If it doesn't work, then I'm not doing it again. See, that's doing something, trying to get something out in the end. They can understand what real generosity is, real liberality. Even if you can go and just help a friend because they need your assistance. And if you come back and you complain and never even said thank you, that's not real giving. You give for the sake of just giving, expecting nothing back in return. Even as a monk, you do that. So many of the things which you do for nothing. You go and serve people, allow them to talk about their problems, even go to funerals, and sometimes there's even not even any donations at all, you just go and give. You say, you know, do you have to charge for this? We don't charge for anything. And they think, oh great, please. But we don't mind, we just give for the sake of giving, give for the sake of serving, expecting nothing back in return. Now remember that in your meditation, because that's one of the first parts of letting go. Giving to this moment, expecting nothing back. If you expect even the tiniest thing, you'll never get peaceful. You give. The next way is called like freeing the mind. Freeing the mind is all about contentment. I use the story of that monk. Most of you know the story, I'll just go over it very quickly. The monk who used to go and teach in the jail, and after a while the people in the jail asked him, what's it like in a monastery? And told him just how tough it is in the monastery, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, sleeping on the floor, one meal a day, no TV, no sex, no radio, no sport. And the people in the jail were so upset. They said, oh, it's a terrible place you live. Why don't you come in here and stay with us? They invited the monks to come inside the jail. And it's true. If I went to jail, I would live a much more comfortable life than I do now. I'd be able to sleep on a mattress. I'd be able to, even here, sort of, I just sleep on the floor. I just can't really stand mattresses. It's probably torture for me after all these years. In the jail, you can sleep on the mattress. You don't have to get up till 6 or 7 o'clock. And you have 3 meals a day, sometimes 4 meals a day. You get a choice, everything on a separate plate. You can watch the TV, you can have radio or whatever. There's so much thing. You see movies in the prison. So it is true, monasteries of our tradition are far more austere than any prison. But the point is, why is it that it's so hard to get to our monastery, to get into our monastery? You try and say, can I come and stay for a week? And the guest monk has to look up into the board to see when there's an opportunity, when there's a space, and sometimes you just can't find that space. Especially for women during the rains retreat. For the rain season retreat, we only have 3 rooms available for women. 4 rooms for men available. That's when the Anagarikas don't take them. And it's booked out for 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, and we've already got one person down for 2009. So if any of you wish to actually just spend a rain retreat in our monastery as a woman, you have to wait till 2009. There's more likelihood that Sister Ajahn Wayan will get her block, business block, built before then. But the point is, why is it that people like to go to a monastery when it's so austere? Why is it you've got so many monks there? Why is it that people always hate to go into a prison, they want to escape? And this is an important point, that any place, in a prison you don't want to be there. In a monastery you want to be there. That's the only difference. It's not the place, it's the attitude of the people who live there. It became very clear that any place you don't want to be is called prison. If you are already not liking this retreat, you don't want to be here, then this retreat is like a prison for you. You can't go beyond these walls. You only get institutional food twice a day. You don't even get 3. You're staying in what's like a cell. And you've got to do what you're told. You're not even allowed to speak in this retreat. It's like being in a prison. If you don't want to be here, it's very easy to think of this place as a prison. And if you're sitting on your meditation cushion, you don't want to be there, you want to be at lunch, or you want to be somewhere else, then you're in prison. That's called suffering. What freedom is, it doesn't matter where you are. If you want to be there, if you're content to be there, you'll always be free. If you're sitting here in this retreat, on this cushion, and you're just happy to be here, in this moment, you find you have all the freedom in the world. That's all it is. Change you from not wanting to be here to wanting to be here in this moment. Too often in one's meditation, one doesn't want to be here. One wants to be in the next moment when the jhana is happening. One wants to be enlightened. One wants to be anywhere other than here. That's why present moment awareness is so important in this meditation retreat. Because coming into the present moment is a sign you want to be here. It's a sign of contentment. It's a sign of freedom. You find that all of the distractions of the mind, whether it's ill will, whether it's thinking, whether it's fantasizing, whether it's wanting to read a book or go somewhere or do something, all of that is all because of lack of contentment. You're not free then. Actually, I was going to mention later on, I'm bringing it up again, in the 5 hindrances. The Buddha actually gave a simile for restlessness of being a slave, not being a free man or a free woman. Because restlessness, you're a slave to this mind which says, no, go over here, go over there, think this, think that. Don't sit here, go and sit over there. Don't sit, go walk, don't walk, go sleep, go sleep, have a bath, don't have a bath, go and have a cup of tea. Always restless, never being able to stay still. It's like you're a slave to the wanting mind. As if there's a tyrant which is always telling you what to do. And it's a tyrant which never gives the slave even a moment's rest so he can just sit down. I don't know if you've ever been working like that. You haven't had a moment. You've always got things to do, one thing after another. Never a moment of rest. Understand what that restlessness is. It's all because we're a slave. Because we have no freedom. Freedom is just being able to be here. With nobody, not even a thought inside of you, telling you what to do. There's nothing to do when you're in freedom. You don't have to change your bodily position. You don't have to get rid of your diseases. You don't have to get rid of the aches and pains in your body. You don't have to get rid of your restless mind. Just want to be here. So if the mind is all over the place, say, that's all right with me. I want to be with you, mind, no matter what you do. The door of my heart's open to you, no matter what you want to do. That's called freeing the mind. It goes against the controlling mind I've been talking about. Come on, mind, watch the breath. Come on, mind, stop thinking about this and that. Come on, mind, get into jhana. Come on, come on, come on. That's the tyrant mind. It's the cause of restlessness. Thinking backwards and forwards, wandering all over the place. We wander from place to place looking for a place of contentment, a place where we can sit down and rest, a place of freedom. But we don't realize we have the place of freedom now. We don't need to change the external positions, situations. We only need to change the way we regard them. That is the most important part of freedom. Being content where you are. Accepting this, no matter what it is. Then you have all the freedom in the world. It's called letting go again. Of controlling. The next part of letting go is called throwing away. It's called patinisco, relinquishing. See in your meditation, see how much you can relinquish. That's what the path of meditation is, chucking things out, which you think you own. When we look at, what do we own anyway? What is ours? When we start meditating, the first thing we throw out is time. Time doesn't belong to you. Actually, time very often owns you, controls you, makes you do all these things fast or slow or whatever, because you become a prisoner of time. It's one of the first things we throw out. When we meditate, time. I haven't got a clue. There used to be some period of my monastic life I used to worry about how long I used to sit for, whether it's 30 minutes or an hour or 2 hours. I just don't bother now about how long you sit, an hour and a half, 2 hours, 5 hours, half an hour, 10 minutes, 10 hours, who cares? You sort of let go of time, so you're not really concerned. You don't go looking at the clock and see if you can beat your record. How long can you sit for? Oh, this retreat, I'm going to really go for 1.5 hour sit. You don't go in the Guinness Book of Records for sitting long periods of time. You throw out that idea of time. And you throw out this chatter inside. You just chuck it out. What are you listening to that stuff for? That stuff is not accurate, it's not true. What you think it is not what it actually is. The same in the Sapurusa Sutta. Whatever he conceives it to be, it's always something else. I love that one. So whatever you conceive it to be, you're always wrong. So just throw the whole thing out. And just, it's always inaccurate. So throw the whole thing out. Just all this thinking business. It's never got you anywhere. So you throw that out. And then what's left after you think you've got the breath, you've got the body, then throw the body out as well. Is the body yours? What are you bothering about? You know, sort of worrying about this itch, that ache, this pain. Not you hurting, it's just the body hurting. So just don't worry about it. You can let go of the body if you really have that ability just to let go and throw things away. I've been given a simile recently about people going in a hot air balloon. You can go so high in a hot air balloon by throwing out all the ballast, all the dead weight of time and thinking and family and monetary worries, if you're among monasteries. Throw all that out of your basket so you can go really high. And then he goes so high and he can't go any higher. You look in the basket and you can't find anything in that basket at all to throw out. How can I go higher? How can I go higher? And then the realization comes. Throw the basket out. So you untie the basket. And then when the basket drops from the balloon, the balloon goes really, really high. With you just hanging onto the ropes. And you go so high, and you're still not to Nirvana yet, so you're very close. So what can I throw out now? What can I throw out now? What's stopping the balloon going to Nirvana? You are. So you've got to let go of the ropes. You've got to throw you out. And when you throw you out, then you go all the way to Nirvana. So in that simile, you've got all this other muck and rubbish and stuff in your basket. All that you think is yours. Your family, your children, your husband, your wife, your career, your money, your fame, your status, your age, whatever else you know you think you own, your thoughts, time. When you throw all that out, when you get so high, the next thing you've got to throw out is your body. Let go of this body. That's called a basket. Many of you bodies are basket cases. Throw it out, let it go. And then all you've got left is the mind. When you throw off the basket, that's called gaining jhanas. That's when you go to pure mind. You've just got jhana left, just beautiful mind. It's pretty high, very close to nirvana, but not quite. Then you've got to throw out the mind as well. You have to go. And that's when you get to nirvana. So that's like renunciation, giving up. So in your meditation, see what you can give up next. Because if you're sitting here, and you get to a plateau, never look around inside. What can I throw out next? And if you see something, throw it out straight away, and you get much more peaceful. Have another look. What can I throw out next? Throw it out. So meditation is just about chucking things out of your basket. It's called letting go. And the last part of letting go is this beautiful word, anatta. It means having no places where the mind can settle on. Like a Teflon mind, I used to call it. A Teflon mind, nothing sticks to it. So a thought can come in the mind, but allow the mind not to stick. It's like you put grease on the mind. Like Teflon. So whatever happens, the sound comes along, it just doesn't stick. A pain comes along, it just doesn't stick. It's just in a moment, it's another moment comes in us. Is like a simile of like a bird. A bird who flies up into the air but has got no twig or branch on which to rest. It can't settle anywhere. Nothing can settle on you. After a while that bird flies in the air, looking for a place to land, and can't find one place. And that bird just dies and disappears. Your craving has no place to settle, and therefore it dies. It just wears itself out. So where does your craving settle? What do you think you own? Take away all those little roostings, all those little perches in the mind. You know, like my family, my money, my fame, my spiritual materialism, my meditation, any place where you know you can actually settle. That's me. Have no places at all. And then you've let go completely. The four ways of letting go in the fourth noble truth said by the Buddha. In brief, generosity. Giving to this moment, not expecting. So non-expectations of returns. Number two is, what was it? Freedom, by being content wherever you are, even in the jail, even though you're hurting, this is good enough. This is good enough. If you want jhanas, if you want this, you want that, that's not freedom. You are now in a prison. When the first want arises, there you are in jail. Freedom is when there's no wanting. It's called the freedom from desires, not the freedom of desires. Freedom from desires. And then throw things away, whatever you can throw away, throw it out in meditation. And last, have a mind. to which nothing sticks, the Teflon mind. As soon as a moment arises, it's gone. You don't even linger, not even a moment. You get a beautiful jhana, the next moment's gone. You don't even worry about it. That was the last moment, that's old stuff. Who cares about what's already gone? Let it go that quickly. Four ways of letting go. Problem is that we have these hindrances which are completely opposed to those four ways of letting go. And the first two hindrances, they're the big ones, they're the ones which stop people really achieving anything. First two are desire and ill will. Especially that sensory desire, desire to the body, desire to the world, of things. Desire for food, desire for physical comfort, desire to get rid of pains. Desire to know what that sound is outside. That's all concerned with the body. You can see what desire does. It takes you out of this moment onto the next moment. It is what pulls you out of this to somewhere else. It can pull you off into some sort of sexual fantasy. That's desire. It can pull you off to 11 o'clock when we're having lunch. I wonder what we're having for lunch today. Do you know what we're having for lunch? Just look at it. Just imagine it. Just feel it. You see how desire just pulls you away from the moment. Or it can be like desire for spiritual things, you know, desire for bliss, for deep meditation, seeing past lives and nirvana. Because when you think, oh, wouldn't it be nice to get jhana, you're not here now. You've already gone somewhere else. So that desire is what pulls you out of the moment, pulls you out of silence, pulls you even away from the breath, pulls you out of jhanas. It pulls you away from this. Ill will is what pushes you away from this. Because you're not happy here. You don't like it here. It's not good enough. You're fall fine. I don't want it to be this way. It should be some other way. That negative mind which says this isn't good enough. I hate this. I don't like this. That's what pushes you away from the moment. In the present moment, ill will can be very strong. I don't like this. I want to be somewhere else. I don't want to be sitting on this hard cushion. I've been sitting on this. What am I doing this for anyway? My goodness, I've even had to pay money for this. I could be paid money to be tortured for 9 days. I have to get up really early in the morning, go without afternoon food. You get ill will very easily. It's amazing just how people can get ill will to the most silly of things. Even your meditation cushion. You've got a lump in the meditation cushion, so you pound it this way and pound it that way to try and get the lump down. You can't get the lump out. You stupid cushion. And you sort of go and hit it hard, I taught you. So that ill will can so easily go onto anything. And very often it goes to yourself. I'm stupid, I'm hopeless. How many times have I come to this meditation retreat and I can start getting into the present moment? Let alone jhana. I bet everyone else is getting into jhana by now, but not me. I'm hopeless. Whenever you start to think in those sorts of ways, it's ill will towards yourself. When it's ill will towards yourself, you can't stand yourself, you can't stand the moment, you can't stand anything. You do anything to get away. And that's why that you can't stay with anything. Because ill will is so such a big problem, a big hindrance, we always say that ill will should be overcome by loving kindness. And not just loving kindness to a person, loving kindness to a moment. This little body of mine, aching, hurting, the door of my heart's open to you. You're just being a body, that's all. It's just nature to ache, to hurt, be hungry. Whatever it is. So be kind to your body. Don't try and make it anything other than it is. Even if it's hurting, that's just the body doing its thing. Leave it alone. Don't try to get rid of the pain. If the body is tired, the door of my heart's open to this as well. Be kind to your tiredness. If you can sit with it, fine. But if you want to take it to bed, fine. Just don't be too hard. Don't have too much ill will. You're watching the moment and the sounds outside of people sitting next to you are just fidgeting backwards and forwards. Don't have ill will to them. Don't have ill will to sound. It's just a nature. When things move, sound happens. It's cause and effect, that's all. So so the door of my heart's open to sound. Whatever's happening in this moment, the door of my heart's open to it, so I don't reject anything out of ill will, but I embrace it with loving kindness, with acceptance, with letting go, letting it alone. And because ill will is such a huge obstacle, you should do a lot of loving kindness. The door of my heart's open to this, the door of my heart's open to this, the door of my heart's open to this. It works so fantastically well. Sometimes people have been sitting meditation, they've been sitting all 9 days, the 8th day or 7th day or something, they're getting nowhere. And they realize because they've been running on ill will all throughout the week. They don't want this, they want something else. And so they just say to this, oh, I'm not going to get anywhere, I'm not going to get into jhana. But this is good enough. Below me, the door of my heart's open to you, no matter what you ever do. In this moment, the door of my heart's open to this as well, with real kindness. And they finally just drop into a deep meditation, just like that. Because they develop this opposite of ill will. Remember, ill will pushes you away. I don't want this. When you get ill will towards your partner, you get anger, you have to get divorced eventually or take time out. When you get ill will towards anything, you have to run away. That's what ill will does. It makes you move, it makes you want to get rid of things. And also, there's this very fascinating part of ill will. When you get into the deeper stages of meditation, there's a really weird type of ill will, which is usually only for Westerners. This ill will which says, I don't deserve to be enlightened, I don't deserve to have bliss. Maybe other people, yeah, but not me. And that part of ill will is actually very deep rooted. It comes from the inherent guilt of Westerners especially. Because we're taught from the time we're very young, never to praise ourselves, but always to feel guilty when we do something wrong. We mentioned yesterday with like remorse. We're always taught to feel guilty, and if you feel guilty, you don't get punished. You think, okay, he feels guilty now, punish himself, and you do. Too many people feel guilty about something they did in the past. And the problem with guilt is we want punishment, and punishment means we don't allow ourselves to be happy. And that's so deeply rooted in many people. You get to a certain stage in your meditation when the door of happiness is open to you. You will not go through because you don't deserve it, so you think. You have ill will towards yourself. And that's such a powerful hindrance, which really comes up at the very deep stages of meditation, which is underlying the other stages as well. That we really do need to spend time, hours sometimes, just forgiving ourselves. Giving ourselves loving kindness again and again and again until we really give ourselves freedom to have happiness, ultimate happiness. To say, the door of my heart's open, you can be happy. I give myself permission to have bliss. If you don't do that, sometimes the bliss never happens. You come to a certain stage and you can't go further. It's because of guilt. So, those first two hindrances are by far the biggest. Desire and ill will. Desire is what pulls you away, somewhere other than here, somewhere other than silence, somewhere other than the breath, somewhere other than even the beautiful nimittas. You have to be where you are to get deeper in meditation. You don't need to go on to anything else. You go into where you are. I've given a simile about all the different stages of meditation can be imagined like a series of concentric rings. Or you might look upon that as Russian dolls, where you open up one doll and there's another doll inside. This is what meditation is about. You get the outer doll of like the present moment awareness. Silence, you don't have to throw away that doll to get silence. Silence is right inside that door. And when you have silence, you don't have to throw away silence. The breath is right inside that. The beautiful breath is right inside the ordinary breath. You don't have to throw away the breath, especially to get the nimitta. The nimitta is right inside the beautiful breath. You don't have to throw away the nimitta to get into jhana. The jhana's in the nimitta. So you don't have to throw away anything. You don't go on to the next thing. You go into the thing which you have now, and the jhana's right inside of that, in the middle. This restless, painful, hopeless mind you have right now, jhana's right in the center of that, in this moment. So don't throw anything away. Don't throw this moment away. You go into it. That's how one goes deep in meditation. Ill will pushes you away. Desire pulls you away. It stops you going in. There's another beautiful word in Buddhism called the arsals. It literally means the outflowings of the mind. And it's one of those that sometimes, if you read translations of the sutras, sometimes they call it taints, sometimes they call it cankers. This literal meaning is outflowings. And you can understand that when you're sitting here, why does the mind want to go somewhere else? Why has it gone out to the sound of the helicopter? Why does it go out to the lunch coming next? Why does it go out to the interviews coming next? Why does it go out to the past? Why can't it stay inside? Why does it go out to dreams, to fantasies, to plans? You can see that's the outflowing of the mind, which stops it going inwards. It's the opposite direction to where you're supposed to be going in. And that outflowing of the mind is pulled by desire, is pushed by ill will. And that's the problem, that's the big hindrance to success in meditation. You can't go in when you have this current forcing you out. And many of the skillful means which we teach here is learning to weave around that current which takes you in the wrong direction. We've had a question yesterday about technology and scientific advances. A lot of that is going out in the world. Thinking the problem can be solved out there. Rather than in spiritualism, we go inside to solve all the problems of the world. We solve sicknesses. We solve the lack of contentment. We have comfort by going inside, not going outside to get a new gizmo. So this is those first two hindrances. Desire pulls you out. Ill will pushes you out. The next two hindrances, I mentioned some about those already. Restlessness and sloth and torpor. Two opposites. And very often the people, I remember my early life as a monk, I was always just either slothful or I was restless. If I wasn't restless, I was slothful. If I wasn't slothful, I was restless. Yeah. Just go between the two of them, right? It took years to work out what was going on. You either fall asleep or you just be thinking too much. You try to subdue the thinking too much, try to stop being restless and you fall asleep. You couldn't find that middle path in between. And then you realize that what is restless is you're doing too much, controlling, wanting. As I was saying, the Buddha said it's like being like a slave. Where there's a slave, there must be a master, a mistress, a tyrant telling you what to do. And I've mentioned to many people over the years, you know that tyrant, who it is, it's not me. Very rarely do I tell people what to do. Even in the monastery, I say you can get up whatever time you want. I don't give you orders, you don't have to sit for so long, I'm not a tyrant. I deliberately go against having a tyrannical retreat, because that was just encouraging you to be a tyrant yourself. So give up that tyrant. You know that person inside of you always telling you what to do? Come on, you know, meditate. Come on, it's the second day now, you should be getting somewhere. Come on, just how you've been really lazy. What time are you getting up? Come on, what time are you getting up? Come on, confess, get up earlier. Go to bed later. This tyrant inside you, yeah. Please do not listen to that. That's the restlessness. And after a while, it wears you out and you get tired, for sloth and torpor. It's all because of that tyrant inside. So when you know that tyrant, you see that fellow, and you decide, I'm not going to listen to you anymore. That tyrant might shout at you, no, I'm not going to listen to you anymore. And after a while, the tyrant dies. And all that controlling inside of you, all that having to do this, out of guilt, out of being a sheep, because other people do it. Don't be a sheep on this meditation retreat. There's already too many sheep in Australia. Don't just look what other people are doing. So, because when you do what other people do, you just become a conditioned sheep. So instead of doing that, just give up that tyrant. When you give up that tyrant, sloth and torpor and restlessness just disappear. Again, a lot of restlessness can be overcome by this contentment business. You're free. I don't want anything. I don't want to be anywhere else. This is good enough. I'm quite satisfied. I'm content. Then you're out of prison. Because again, like sloth and torpor. Sloth and torpor actually was said to be in a prison by the Buddha. In this dark, dingy cell. You can't move. And you know what prisons are. Sloth and torpor, restlessness, having a tyrant, a workmaster, that's like being in prison but being on one of these chain gangs, always having to work, still being in prison. Sloth and torpor, restlessness, it's all about being in prison. And you can overcome that just by this beautiful technique of this is good enough, this is good enough, this is good enough. Called contentment. Freedom. So many stories about in the time of the Buddha, people becoming enlightened just so quickly. They were trying so hard for many years and then they completely let go. They gave up and then they became enlightened. One of the reasons I encourage people to sleep a lot during this retreat was because of the Buddha's chief attendant, Venerable Ananda. You know his story. He was meditating all night before the first council. There were going to be 500 monks meeting together. 499 were fully enlightened. He was the odd one out. He wasn't enlightened at all. It's just the same as if this was the last day. And I said, there's 47 on this retreat. 46 are fully enlightened. Only you. Now what would you think if that was the case? You would really put forth effort to meditate. Just out of pride. And that's what Venerable Ananda did. He really gave it everything he got all night. And he didn't mess around at all. And of course what happened? Nothing. He didn't get enlightened at all. He was hopeless. You see why? Just wanting, wanting, trying, trying, trying. And so he gave up. He decided to go and have a little nap before answer. And before his head hit the pillow, he became the 500th arahant. As soon as he gave up, he became enlightened. So that's why I encourage people to sleep a lot, because just before you hit the pillow, that's your big chance. If you do it often enough, it must happen. More about it. Now what we're saying there is just that you can understand why, what the reason is, giving up, letting go, abandoning. So you can abandon this restlessness and sloth and torpor resistance. And it becomes quite easy then. You're not restless, you're not sloth and torpor, just natural energy flows. Remember again, the knower and the doer, knower and the doer, knower and the doer. Please understand what those two are. The knower is the passive mind. That which is listening to this, that which can hear the thoughts in your mind, that which can see, that which can feel the aches and the pains or the cold and the heat in the body, that which can taste the food. It's passive, it just knows. It receives the information from the world. That's the knower. The doer is what reacts back. It says, I don't like this, I want that. Which says, and I want to scratch this itch, I want to move this way, I want to go over there into the garden, I want to go to the toilet, I want to do this. It's always doing, 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 doing. That which pushes you and pulls you. The doer mind. Because people do so much in their life, because we have to do so much in our life because of modern technology, because we're expected to work so hard, our doer gets 99% of our energy, which is why the 1% left of the knowing is barely enough. We go around life in a dream, in a haze, because the knowing hasn't got much energy. While we get tired. In this retreat, you can't do very much. You can't choose what you're going to eat. You can't choose sort of what I'm going to say. You can't just get one of these remote controls if you don't know what I'm saying. Sort of click me off and try the next man sitting next to me. Click him off. My sister, see what she's going to say. You can't do this. You're stuck with me for this retreat. So much of your choice has been taken away during the retreat. And this is why it's wonderful. You can't do very much. Even in your meditation, take the attention, take the energy away from doing it. Just no. So there's no doing at all. You're not doing the meditation. You're knowing the moment. As that persists throughout the meditation retreat, you find energy starts coming back naturally. Sloth and torpor end there. Because the energy comes back into the knowing, and it's not wasted through the doing, the knowing gets brighter and brighter and brighter. You don't have to do very much. You don't get so tired, you don't have to sleep so much. When you're meditating, you're bright because the knower's got energy. And that's great fun to have an energetic knower. Whatever you see is beautiful, what you taste is so delicious. And you watch the breath and it's so wonderful. Energy is going into the knower. That's where you get rid of sloth and torpor and restlessness and worry. Doing is being restless. Knowing is being peaceful. Mindfulness. Superpower mindfulness. Joyful mindfulness. So it all comes together. So be careful not to do things in this retreat. There's another hindrance called doubt. And that's a fascinating hindrance, because sometimes when things start to happen in our meditation, you've got this over-inquisitive mind, which always says, what is this, what is this, what is this, when it's the wrong time to ask. Leave all inquiries to the end of each meditation. After you're finished, then you can say, what was that? I was told when I first went to Thailand that whatever food you're given, don't ask what's in it. There's very good reasons for that. 30 years ago in Northeast Thailand, all sorts of things which crept and crawled went in those curries. It's great in meditation, you don't have to ask what's in the meditation. Just know the bliss, that's enough. Don't go to be too analytical at that stage. It goes too much doubt, thinking, analysing. The Buddha actually gave this powerful little sutta once, where he said, after getting rid of those big hindrances, the last hindrance before you gain jhanas, he said, is thinking about Dhamma. It's a powerful saying. You get so peaceful, and you're almost there, and then you start analysing it. And of course it's very interesting to see some amazing insights at that place. Oh, this is really beautiful. I understand this now. Oh, that's really good. Shut up! Because you're about to get into something really powerful. But we keep analysing at the last moment. It's not the time yet. We've almost done the experiment. We've almost got the big results in. And before we get the big results in, we go analysing, working it all out when we haven't got sufficient data yet. The experiment is still underway. Don't go counting the votes until all the polling booths are closed. That's what we do sometimes. So that doubt business, even alone, it becomes like a habit of us to be analytical, to analyse this and analyse that, which is fine, but at the right time and the right place. So you might get sort of like a nimitta coming up in the mind. Maybe the first time you've got the beautiful light. You think, what is that? You start analysing, the whole thing just disappears again. Or you might sort of have this doubt, is it nimitta, is it not nimitta? Just leave that alone. It doesn't matter if it is or it isn't. Just watch what's there. You can find out later on what it is. Stop analysing and working it out, because that's moving the mind. So one should get rid of that doubt, because that is a hindrance which especially comes up in the deeper stages of meditation. Look out for that one. So those are like the hindrances, what stops you actually progressing this meditation, enjoying yourself. I'll just go over them. I've mentioned a few other than the five hindrances. Impatience, first of all, was the first thing I put there. Washing the dishes. If you want the dishes to be washed, don't think when the dish is going to be washed, when the dish is going to be washed, when the dish is going to be washed. Find the causes, put the causes in place, and the dishes wash themselves once you've done the causes. So look for the causes of deep meditation. And then you understand where you make your mistakes. I want, impatience. Desire and ill will, first two hindrances. Don't want anything. Ill will, accept everything. Going against those two hindrances. And go back to those four parts of letting go, which I said in the third noble truth, which constitute the heart of that fourth noble truth. Chaga Patinisaka Muti Analaya in Pali. Giving, expecting nothing back in return. You give your whole life to this moment. And when I was in Singapore a week or two ago, we went to go and see a monk at the Mangala Vihara. And he asked me to sign the visitor's book. And so I signed that visitor's book. But it's not just a visitor's book, it's also a donation book as well. So you put your name, where you came from, and donation. And being a monk, you know, what can I give? So I wrote down, for my donation, my life. I wrote that in the book, my life, and my donation. Can you do the same? You can in this moment, give your whole life, everything, 100%, your whole being to this moment. Hold nothing back. That's called giving. And expect nothing back from your marvellous gift. I don't expect one of these receipts I can claim back on taxes given my whole life. Don't expect anything back in return for this, for what you do. That's called giving. Freedom is just only contentment, wherever you are. So when you really understand the truth of that, you can be free any place at any time. When you find contentment to be there. And then no one could put you in a jail. No one could torture you. And you know what freedom is. Just happy to be here. And Patinisaka, see what you can throw away. Throw away all your attachments, any weight, anything you're carrying, anything you're holding on to. Throw it away. And have this Teflon mind. The past doesn't stick at all. Doesn't matter what's been going on so far in this retreat. Doesn't matter what's been going on so far in your life. If you had great meditations, or you'd never had one decent meditation the whole of your life, throw all of that away. Teflon mind. There is no past at all. You're not a prisoner of your past. The mind can't go anywhere to sort of build up a sense of, this is me. You're completely empty. And those are the ways to really let go. So there's no desire, there's no ill will. There's no restlessness, there's no sloth and torpor. The energy just goes into pure knowing. And you stop all this doubting business. And wait till the end of the retreat when you've got all the information in, all the data in, then you can figure it all out. Don't go around figuring out too soon. Five hindrances, the ways to have a wonderful time in your meditation retreat. So, any questions about what I've just been saying? Do you want to understand what the hindrances are? Why you don't get into deep meditation? So, all those hindrances have been swept away, they're no longer there for you. So this next meditation should be just so blissful. Correct? So nirvana is there for you before lunch. Well, if you get enlightened before lunch, you can go home and do other things and don't fear anymore. Just get it out of the way and you can go and sort of do other things in life. Okay, so I think, yeah, who's got a question here?
When you sit and meditate, and then like you are peaceful, then when you get out, and then walk from here to the like to the garden in order to do walking meditation, from where we walk and going there, the thinking process starts out is not as peaceful. And then when you walk in, you become peaceful again. And then, like, when you're tired, you want it to go back into your room. And then when you walk to your room, it's not as peaceful as when you walk in meditation. When you lie in bed, then you're peaceful again. Like the connection of the action is not maintained.
That's why there's one of the monks in Thailand which we knew came fully enlightened. That he would just be on his walking meditation path. To stop that problem, when he wanted to sit, he'd just sit right there. When he got tired, he'd just lay out there. So he'd just go out into the garden. When you get tired of walking, just sit in the garden. When you get tired of sitting, just lay down in the garden. When you wake up, so see you. You don't have to go anywhere, do you? But if you can't do that, then when you walk from place to place, call that walking meditation. Be in the moment. Try and be quiet. Just give the order to the mind. Say, I've got to go to the garden. And then the mind will take your body to the garden. You don't need to go and thinking about it all the time. Once you've given that order. And then just be with your feet. Feel every moment as you're going to the garden. Just make sure there's no hindrances coming up. You're not doing things, you're just knowing. Same when you take it to your room. So count all of those things as part of meditation. That's why I've already mentioned that we have breakfast meditation. That's meditation as well. It's not time off. It's time when you can just be. Be with the beautiful taste of the food. You're doing toilet meditation. Just be there. Be with what's happening. Not trying to change it, not trying to get rid of it. Just trying to be there. And now we have interview meditation. So we have the strong light and the two chairs in the room over there for the interrogations. Those of you who know, we just don't talk like that. So we've got the list of the interviews there. I know that already someone's crossed their name off. On those interview lists, you can see that there's a space next to your name for the 3 days. Saturday, Monday and Wednesday for this group, and the Sunday, Tuesday and Thursday for the other group. If that day you don't want an interview, you can just put a cross in that little box there so I know not to expect you. This morning it's Penny first of all, then Sharon, Eileen at 9:20, Georg at 9:30, Betty at 9:40, Pauline at 9:50, at 10 o'clock we've got Jim. Irene, let's cross the name off this time. Upal, I should put my glasses on, maybe see properly. Upal at 10:20, Jiro1 at 10:30, Jan Endrika at 10:40, and Winnie at 10:50. And that's in the room over there. The thing to do is actually just maybe 2 or 3 minutes before your interview, just if you'd like just to go and sit just outside or sit close by, and I'll send the attendant mark just to come and get you when the previous person has finished. So those are the interviews. Okay, so they're on the wall just by the door there for today's interviews. This morning, Penny, Sharon, Eileen, Giok, Rawi, Betty, Pauline, Chen Yokshio, Eileen, Upo, Irene. I can have a rest then, thanks to Ari. Nyan Indrika and then Winnie. And this afternoon we have 12 more interviews and they are on the board outside. Is that okay?